We tend to get carried away by irrelevances. I'll tell one personal story here. I knew a very learned Sanskrit and Pali scholar who had studied the languages from the philological point of view. And gradually he became interested in what was in these languages, as distinct from the grammar and the borrowings of the vocabulary from the Dravidian and other sources. And he asked me whether I could suggest any teacher or place to go to study the Indian Buddhism or the Vedanta. He didn't much care which it was, so long as he did some of this training that he'd been reading about. And looking at him, I advised him, said, on no account study Indian Buddhism or Indian Vedanta. And he was very surprised at this. What then? I said, study the Japanese or the Chinese Buddhism. He said, but I already know many of the Sanskrit and Pali texts. I know a great deal of the history. I know a lot of the Indian Buddhism. And you're saying, leave all that. And I told him that if he took a teacher of the actual practice, every time the teacher opened his mouth, that great scholar would be criticizing. Because if the teacher, for instance, came from Bengal, he would be pronouncing Maitri as Moitri. It's the way they pronounce it in Bengal. And every time the teacher exhorted him to practice friendliness, the first of the Brahma Viharas, Maitri, he would go, He would not be thinking of friendliness, he would only be thinking that it was a mispronunciation of Maitri and replacement of that diphthong with another diphthong. And then when the teacher said the Maitri is the first of the Brahma Viharas, four Brahma Viharas, which are known, very ancient in Buddhism. Instead of thinking of these four Brahma Viharas, friendliness, compassion, and cheerfulness with somebody who's happy and indifference to someone who's evil, instead of thinking of those four, he would be thinking, oh no, these aren't Buddhist in origin at all. They're found in part one of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra Darshana. The teacher is wrong. He would not be thinking of the content at all, but only of the pronunciation, only of the historical associations. So much better, I said to him, study Chinese or Japanese Buddhism where you'll know nothing whatever, and you can come forward like a child and actually learn something. Reasons are given to us which we can't understand. Instructions are given. We can't understand the reasons. But sometimes reasons are invented to satisfy the mind of people who begin to practice, if they're such that they demand reasons for everything. There are many practices for which only experience tells the reason for the form of the practice. But the intellect, especially of people who are proud of their intellect, demands an explanation. Well, in judo, sometimes we explain something. The Japanese students will accept it and practice it for a few months. Then when they've got experience in that movement, you can explain why. It's turned this way and not that way. Then they can understand it. But with Westerners, the moment you say, turn it this way, they say, but why not that way? Wouldn't that be better? Well, it's only experience that would provide the true reason, but we have to invent a series of sort of pseudo-scientific explanations which are not really true, but which satisfy them enough so that they can practice, and then later on they'll find out the true reason. When I was very small, but I can still remember it, about four, I went into the kitchen and they had one of those big kitchen clocks which go tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. And I can remember asking my mother, what's it saying? Why does it do that? Well, now, it's not so easy. Tick, tock, you see, that's what it says. But I was the third son, so she had experience with this sort of question. So she said, oh, it says tick-tock because it likes that. See? So I said, oh, doesn't it say anything else? Why doesn't it say anything else? And then she, again ingeniously, said, you know your drum? You like, don't you? Just banging it, don't you? God, how you like banging that drum. Just banging it. She said, well, in the same way, the clock likes saying tick-tock. Well, I understood that. Yes, I like beating that drum, and it liked going like that. Well, now, recently I've had the same experience. Then I couldn't understand the mechanism of the clock or why this would happen. And now I have a small computer, and I have a lesson once a week. And my computer has one anomaly, in a way. Anyway, you have to manipulate it in a way contrary to what the textbook says, for a particular reason, which, anyway, when this first came up, I said, oh, but the textbook says that. Why do we have to do this? And I could see the fellow, the young fellow who teaches me, I could see him thinking, yeah. And then he said, just what my mother said, he said, it likes that. Well, we're given all sorts of practices and disciplines, and our intellect, especially if we're a bit lazy, will put up all sorts of objections and so on. And it's worth remembering that it's unreasonable to expect explanations of these things which depend on experience. And we must rely not on our intellect justifying the practice, but on the experience of the teacher who gives it. Teacher said about the idea that in a Buddhist training, go on one straight line, keep to something. And yet at the same time it says, oh, well, you've got to accept things, you've got to be flexible. And the example he gave was of a gyroscope or spinning top. Now, if you've played with one as a child or you've seen a gyroscope spinning, its balance is so perfect when it's revolving that it can travel down the little notch at the bottom. It can travel down a string and still keep its balance on the string. If it was stationary, it couldn't do that. It's revolving about its center. It can keep a perfect balance on that string. And yet, if you even blow, the gyroscope will just spin. But it will come back to its balance. Again, it'll give way to the passing things, but it'll come back very strongly to its point of balance again and settle itself. Well, he said, in the same way, there is something in the training which keeps on the same line and keeps perfectly balanced. But at the same time, it can adapt quite freely and softly to the impulses, the momentary impulses from outside and the adjustment of the circumstances, and then it will again resume its balance and go forward. Another teacher gives us an example that the gyroscope adapts gently but firmly, comes back. And he said to react, it doesn't react powerfully against it. And he gave us an example of that. A man who's trying to calm a lake or even in his bath. If he wants the bath to be calm and he tries smacking down the waves as they come up, he said, that's like you trying to smack down your thoughts as they arise. You create new ones. But if instead you simply keep still and you watch the wave, then they've died down with themselves.